doing under the bed?
Nothing. I'm sure Andy was just a little excited, if that's all. Too much cake and ice cream, I suppose. It's just a mistake.
Well, that mistake is sitting in your spot, Woody.
Have you been replaced?
Hey, what did I tell you earlier? No one is getting replaced. Now, let's all be polite and give whatever it is up there a nice, big Andy's room welcome.
Buzz Lightyear to Star Command. Come in, Star Command. Star Command, come in. Do you read me?
Why don't they answer?
My ship!
Blast. This'll take weeks to repair.
Buzz Lightyear mission log, stardate 4072. My ship has run off course en route to Sector 12. I've crash-landed on a strange planet. The impact must have awoken me from hypersleep. Terrain seems a bit unstable. No readout yet if the air is breathable. And there seems to be no sign of intelligent life anywhere.
Hello?
Oh, yeah!
Ah! Whoa! Hey, whoa. Did I frighten you? Didn't mean to. Sorry, howdy. My name is Woody, and this is Andy's room. That's all I wanted to say. And also, there has been a bit of a mix-up. This is my spot, see? The bed here?
Local law enforcement. It's about time you got here. I'm Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger, Universe Protection Unit. My ship has crash-landed here by mistake.
Yes, it is a mistake, because, you see, the bed here is my spot.
I need to repair my turbo boosters. Do people still use fossil fuels, or have you discovered crystallic fusion?
Well, let's see. We got double A's.
Watch yourself.
Boom! Pause. Who goes there?
Don't shoot!
It's okay. Friends.
Do you know these life forms?
Yes. They're Andy's toys.
All right, everyone. You're clear to come up. I am Buzz Lightyear. I come in peace.
Oh, I'm so glad you're not a dinosaur.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Now, thank you all for your kind welcome.
Say, what's that button do?
I'll show you.
Buzz Lightyear to the rescue.
Ooh. Hey, Woody's got something like that. His is a pull strength. Only
it sounds like a car ran over it.
Oh, yeah, but not like this one. This is a quality sound system. Probably all copper wiring, huh? So, where are you from? Singapore? Hong Kong?
Well, no. Actually, I'm stationed up in the Gamma Quadrant of Sector 4. As a member of the elite Universe Protection Unit of the Space Ranger Corps, I protect the galaxy from the threat of invasion from the evil Emperor Zurg, sworn enemy of the Galactic Alliance.
Oh, really? I'm from Play School.
And I'm from Mattel. Well, I'm not really from Mattel. I'm actually from a smaller company that was purchased in a leveraged buyout. Well, I don't really...
You think they'd never seen a new toy before?
Well, sure. Look at him. He's got more gadgets on him than a Swiss Army knife.
Toy Story is a great example of how sometimes we feel when we've been replaced by someone else. And as the new toy Buzz Lightyear came into Andy's room and took Woody's place on the bed, Woody had a hard time dealing with it. And the scene continues on where he is very jealous because somebody's taken his place. And it really reminds us of exactly what happened in 1 Samuel with King Saul and David, where King Saul was replaced literally by David as Samuel went and anointed him. And we see, especially in today's text, how Saul's jealousy just enlarges and engulfs him. You know, there's a legend about two men who were bitter enemies, and one was particularly jealous of the other one. And one day, that man found a bottle that contained a genie. And the genie came out and told the man that he would give him any wish that he desired. The only caveat was that his enemy would receive double whatever he asked for. And so the man was really perplexed because he wanted to take advantage of the genie, but he certainly didn't want his enemy, who he was jealous of to get twice as much of it. And so after thinking a while, he told the genie, "Give me whatever I wish. I wish to be blinded in one eye." You know, that's what jealousy ends up doing. It causes nothing but hurt to ourselves and others. And King Saul's relationship to David provides a clear example of jealousy's destructive potential. Saul despised the way that God gave David success and was willing to stop at nothing to have it for himself. And the result of Saul's jealousy is devastating. Now, this morning we're continuing on in our study in the life of David. And just to recap the reason why we're partaking of this study and why we should study the life of David is it's really based on 1 Samuel 13:14, which is being directed at Saul, who is king. "But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." And this man, as we've seen, is David. And he was secretly anointed to be the next king to replace Saul by Samuel. And this happened sometime prior to where we're at in David's life this morning. Now, to give us a context for chapter 18, Saul was the first man appointed to be king over Israel. When he became king, he had the qualities of a king, as we've looked at previously. I mean, for one thing, it's said that he was the handsomest man in all of Israel. It also, the scriptures also tell us that he was head and shoulders taller than any other man in Israel. So by his looks and stature, he was the guy. And initially, he was a humble man. In fact, if you go back in chapter 8 of 1 Samuel to where he is being anointed as king, he actually hides when they come to anoint him. Now, in battle, Saul, in the beginning, was a fierce warrior who led the armies of God in victory after victory. But for all his good qualities, King Saul had one fatal flaw. He had a problem with obedience. And it was not that Saul flagrantly disobeyed God in everything he said. The problem was he didn't completely obey God in what he told him to do. And the end result, and this is a good principle for us to understand, is that partial obedience equals total disobedience to God. He doesn't grade on the curve. He expects us to be obedient to him. And in 1 Samuel 17, which we focused on the past 2 weeks, we witnessed the youthful David's great defeat of the Philistine giant Goliath. Summing it up in chapter 17, verse 51, "Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled." Excuse me. Now, I can't overemphasize the significance of David's victory here. For 40 days, the armies of Israel under Saul's leadership had cowered in fear. They were totally paralyzed with Goliath challenging them, and only David was willing to trust God as he ran ahead and into battle and slew the giant. And that brings us to chapter 18. Now, as we have seen previously, and I've pointed out, the author of 1 Samuel, and there probably was more than one author of this book, including Samuel probably wrote some parts of it, but the author of this book took literary license with the chronology of certain events. And we've already seen that where the end of chapter 16 is clearly takes place after chapter 17. In fact, we'll kind of see it referenced here in chapter 18. And the first five verses of chapter 18 are another instance of this. And so let's take a look ahead, because these verses actually take place further in the future. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul, and Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of his robe that was on him and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And so the bulk of these five verses record events that will take place in the future. And we'll look at these. We'll come back and look at these verses in a couple of weeks when we begin to focus on the relationship between Jonathan and David. And so we're really going to begin with verse 6 today that Mike read. Now, this chapter demonstrates the cause and effects of jealousy. And just to give you a little working definition, envy is basically wanting something that someone else has. Jealousy is that, plus you don't want that person to have it. You want to have it. You want to have what they have, and you don't want them to have it. And that's exactly the situation with Saul. It shows us in this chapter the negative, how Saul became jealous of David and what that jealousy caused him to do. But it also shows us the positive, how David responded to Saul in spite of the terrible ways he was unjustly treated. And so let's look at this chapter and see what it teaches us about jealousy. And the first thing that we see is that jealousy comes from focusing on ourselves instead of God. In other words, Saul only cared about himself and his own reputation. He didn't care anything about God's. And we see that picking it up in verse 6. This verse immediately follows the end of chapter 17. As they were coming home from the battle, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, "Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. He said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom?" And Saul eyed David from that day on. And you can just kind of pencil in evil-eyed David. Okay, that's what it means here. As David's star began to rise, the light of Saul's fame began to diminish. David was young and handsome. He was the Robert Pattinson. He was voted Cosmo's number one young hunk. He's the star of the Twilight movies, none of which I've seen. But he was the Robert Pattinson of his day. He was a hero. He single-handedly defeated a 9-foot nightmare named Goliath. And while doing this, while Saul and the rest of the armies of Israel cowered in the camp, David was a musician. He composed hundreds of psalms and put them to various tunes. Those tunes, it said in Scripture, caused people to feel like they were in the presence of God. The ladies swooned over him. That's what's happening. He was a rock star here. Men admired him, and Saul was jealous of David. And it happened immediately after David had defeated Goliath, and they were making their victory tour back into town. All of the celebration began to happen, and as Saul was had David at his side, and instead of enjoying the celebration of victory, he focused completely on himself. Instead of rejoicing at the victory that God had brought to Israel, he focused on himself and thought he was being slighted. Now, what we see here would be a very typical sort of Jewish celebration where the young women would dance and sing as their heroes passed by. It was sort of the equivalent of today having a ticker tape parade, or for the Super Bowl winner, whoever that's going to go to Disneyland. The girls sang one particular song that sort of mutated to Saul about admiration for what God had done. Because, in fact, the song was celebrating the victory of God, but all Saul could hear was David was being given more credit than he was. And that misunderstanding or that focus that Saul had on himself mutated into jealousy. We see that Saul became very angry, and the saying displeased him. From that day on, when Saul viewed David, it was with an eye to destroy him. That's what the jealousy brought forth. So what could have happened here, and what should have happened? Well, first off, Saul should have led the parade in giving thanks and praise to God for the great victory over Goliath and the Philistines. That's what God is interested in. God is interested in people praising him and thanking him. He's not interested in who else gets the praise, but Saul was only interested in being the one that got the bulk of the praise from the people. Jealousy is a tough thing. You know, it was interesting because the first church that I was pastor of was in North Orange County, and you know, I've shared different things about it, but within 6 months of when I took over as senior pastor of that church, the first Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton relocated from their property further away in Fullerton to right on the border of Brea, which is the town my church was in. And this was the church that Chuck Swindoll was pastor of. And they had purchased 11 acres, and they built all their buildings before they moved in. They had a congregation of over 5,000 people. And they were a mile away from my church. And the fact is that more people probably got lost trying to find Chuck's church than came to my church. I'm sure there were more people that visited Chuck's restrooms than were in our church that day. And there was a major opportunity for jealousy and on my part. And to be sure, I knew pastors in the area that resented what was going on there. But the Lord really helped me as a young pastor to not look at it that way, but to rather say, hey, there's still more than enough people who don't know Christ, who don't go to any church, around us. And I focused on who yet needed a Christ in our community rather than how many people were going to Chuck's church. And to be sure, he sucked great numbers of people from smaller churches like ours when he moved in there. It's just a natural thing. It just happened. But it was a real crossroads and learning experience for me that instead of allowing the enemy to cause jealousy to grow in me and to become resentful of him and what was going on over there, to really focus on reaching the people that weren't going to either one of our churches. So jealousy comes from focusing on ourselves instead of God. Now, there's a second thing we learn from this text about jealousy, and that's that jealousy always escalates into other sins. As if jealousy were not bad enough in and of itself, if not dealt with, it will always lead to more and greater sins. Picking it up in verse 10. The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him twice. Now, this is reminiscent, if you were here at the end of chapter 16, where it describes how the Spirit of God left Saul, and an evil spirit or a harmful spirit from the Lord filled or rushed upon Saul. And from that day on, he struggled with it. And excuse me, and how David playing the lyre was the only way that he could have relief from that harmful spirit. Even with that, Saul attempts to kill David. He realized that David was the object of his jealousy, and he sought to pin him against the wall. Well, attempted murder, it's easy to see, is a greater sin than jealousy. But it was brought on by the jealousy. Picking it up in verse 12. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of a thousand. And he went out and came in before the people. And David had success in all of his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. Now notice how Saul knows that the Lord had departed from him. He knows it, but that did not drive him to his knees in repentance. And you know, that's an important thing, because even Christians can get into a mode where they are living apart, essentially and practically, they're living apart from the Lord. And when they realize that, sometimes they don't repent and come back to the Lord. They just keep on doing like Saul did. It was solely his choice to continue rejecting God's leadership in his life. Now, meanwhile, David, who was in relationship with God, was successful in all of his undertakings. Picking it up in verse 15. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and he came in before them. Then Saul said to David, here is my elder daughter Merab. I will give her to you for a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. Not only did Saul see David's continued success, he also saw and observed that everybody in Israel loved David. I mean, he was the most loved guy in Israel. And in a way, Saul adopts the old, if you can't beat him, join him, and offers him his eldest daughter, Merab, in marriage. And I guess he's thinking that if he brings, you know, if he brings David into his family, then he'll get some of the credit for David's great successes. Of course, we quickly learned that Saul had a more devious motive. Excuse me. For Saul thought, let not my hand be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. And David said to Saul, who am I and who are my relatives, my father's clan in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king? But at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, she was given to Adriel, the Melothite, for a wife. Saul offered his eldest daughter, Merab, to David in return for loyal service in the army. And the plan was, Saul thought that eventually the law of averages would catch up with David and he would be killed in battle at the hands of the Philistine. But when that fails, he reneges on the deal and he gives his daughter in marriage to another man. And I believe that he really figured that that would hurt David and maybe even cause him to do something that he shouldn't do. But once again, the X factor surfaces in the person of Saul's other daughter, Michal, picking it up in verse 20. Now Saul's daughter Michal loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, let me give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law. Now, I don't know what was going on with Michal, but apparently Saul saw her as someone who could be a pain in David's neck. Okay? And, you know, a good woman, hey, a good woman's hard to find, and they're such a blessing. I hate to think of a daddy giving his daughter to somebody because she'll be a snare to his life and cause him all kinds of trouble. But that's where Saul was. Jealous people go into the attack mode easily. On the playground bully hates the way that a teacher dotes over the star pupil. And so at the right moment, that bully pushes that star pupil down on the playground. So he breaks his glasses. The corporate executive fears the young new guy coming in. And it fears that this person is going to surpass him in promotion and raises, and so they secretly undermine that person's projects and work against him and speak against him. I'm so sorry. pastors do this too. You know, there's been books written by pastors against people like Bill Hybels and Rick Warren, criticizing them for their ministries. Those are guys, in case you don't know who they are, who have mega churches, and criticizing their methods and the way they do things, and take any kind of opportunity to attack their character. That is a worldly method, just like Saul is using against David. And we need to take care not to become like that. You know, we can't pick up a spear like Saul and hurl it at somebody we're jealous at. But we can sure say things to assassinate their character. We can treat people in hateful ways because we're jealous of them. One of the great movies of some years ago, Amadeus, which depicted the life of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, arguably the greatest composer of the last 1,000 years. And, you know, it's, you may or may not like Mozart. Living in Vienna, that's where Mozart created most of his great operas and so forth. And in the movie, it depicts the life of Mozart, and throughout the film, he has an antagonist, another composer. In fact, he's the royal composer, Antonio Salieri, who's jealous of Mozart. And at first he befriends Mozart, who's a very young man in the beginning, but then he pushes him to write his own requiem, which is the composition they would play at your funeral service. And he kept pushing and pushing and pushing Mozart, who worked so hard on it, and he also partied very hard, but he died at the age of 35. And some believe, it's always been rumored out there, that Salieri actually poisoned Mozart, all because he was jealous that Mozart was a better composer than he was. Jealousy always escalates into deeper and more heinous sins. And then the last thing we see here about jealousy is that jealousy never satisfies. Let's go back to verse 20. We already read verse 20. We got ahead of ourselves a little bit. Now Saul's daughter loved Micah. Okay, we read this one before. Joyce, you're messing me up here, I'll tell you. Okay, picking it up in verse 22. And Saul commanded his servants, speak to David in private, say, behold, the king has delight in you, and all his servants love you. Now then, become the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servants spoke those words in the ears of David. And David said, does it seem to you a little thing to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and have no reputation? And the servants of Saul told him, thus and so did David speak. And Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king desires no bride price except 100 foreskins of Philistines, that they may be avenged of the king's enemy. Excuse me. Now Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. And when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law. Before the time expired, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, which were given in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him his daughter Michal for a wife. I'm sorry. But when Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, Saul was even more afraid of David, for Saul was David's enemy continually. Then the commanders of the Philistines came out in battle, and as often as they came out, David had more success than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was highly esteemed. Rumor began to circulate that Saul's daughter Michal had a crush on David. And Saul really liked this because he thought that Michal would be a snare to David. And so he sent some of his servants to speak into David's ear, as we read, and say, hey, you know, we really shouldn't be telling you this, but Saul really does want you to be his son-in-law. And so all you have to do is go out and prove that you've killed 100 Philistines by circumcising them and bringing their foreskins back as a trophy. That sounds really weird to us, but it was, you know, if you bring an ear, how do you know it's a Philistine's ear? So that's all you had to do. And David did it twice as much. He killed 200 Philistines and brought all those back. And so Michal became his wife. Thanks, Larry. Larry's my cough drop buddy. Jealousy, when it goes unchecked, has deadly consequences. In Saul's case, his own plans backfired because neither by a direct attack or having the Philistines battle with David continually, or even giving his daughter, who he thought would mess him up, as his wife, none of those things worked. I mean, there's a reason that jealousy is called the green-eyed monster. It kills relationships with other people. Saul's relationship with David proved that jealousy springs from the heart of self-centeredness. We're not able to love other people as we should because we're absorbed with ourselves. And that's where the jealousy comes out. Jealousy makes us feel as if we're saving ourselves. But in the end, it destroys us as it destroyed Saul. There's a little fable about two eagles, and one eagle was jealous of the other eagle, and so he went to the hunter, and he said, "Hey, it'd be a great idea for you to shoot this eagle over here." And the guy says, "Well, I've got a bow, but I need a feather for my arrows. Would you give me a feather?" The guy says, "Sure," and the eagle pulls out a feather and gives it to him. He shoots at the other eagle, and he misses. And so he goes back for more feathers. And before long, he still hasn't killed the one eagle he's trying to, but the eagle that employed him had no feathers and couldn't fly. And that fable is a direct correlation with what's happening to Saul. Jealousy has a real boomerang effect. It comes back and hits us. In his book, None of These Diseases, which is a book about the Old Testament dietary laws and how keeping those dietary laws kept Israel from many of the diseases that were prevalent during those days. But it was written by a guy named Dr. S.I. McMillan. And he wrote this in the book: "Medical science recognizes that emotions such as fear, sorrow, jealousy, resentment, and hatred are responsible for the majority of our sicknesses. Estimates vary from 60 to 100% responsible. One patient told his doctor, if you don't cut out, one patient was told by his doctor, if you don't cut out your resentments, I may have to cut out your intestinal tract. Some of the wealthiest people in the world are among the most unsatisfied people. Years ago, John D. Rockefeller was asked how much would be enough. And his answer was classic. He said, just a little bit more. And at the time he said that, it was at the height of his financial success, and his personal wealth accounted for 2% of the total U.S. GDP. And he just needed a little bit more. Jealousy never satisfies. So what was David doing in all this? Well, first off, he determined to do the right thing, even though he was being unjustly harassed. He never once did anything even remotely disrespectful to Saul. Secondly, he is suffering, but he didn't lash out in response to his suffering. And thirdly, he responded much the same way that Jesus responded when he was unjustly suffering at the hands of people. So what are some takeaways from dealing with jealousy? I think one is that jealousy comes when we take our focus off of God and put it on ourselves. And usually what happens is we look at how little we have compared to how much someone else has, and it makes us jealous. A second takeaway is that jealousy is a stepping stone to other sins. You know, and it's bad enough in and of itself, but it always leads us to do other things that are our sin in our life. And that's why we need to nip it in the bud. And then finally, acting out with jealousy never gains us what we want. And isn't that the irony of it all? Jealousy prompts us to act out in ways that are wrong, and it always affects other people. And yet we never receive what we want in the first place. Let's bow for prayer. Gracious God, as we delve more into David's life and see it compared with Saul's, it becomes so clear the harm that jealousy brings and how subtle it can be. We might feel a slight from somebody or not getting credit for something that we should be getting credit for, or that someone's got more than we have or better than we have. Lord, those are all human ways of thinking. Help us to keep our focus on you, that we won't fall into that. In Christ's name, amen.